enjoy it together. We praise you, God, for your goodness, and you're the same God yesterday, today, and forever. The one who took care of Daniel, who took care of his three friends, who took care of others throughout the word and brothers and sisters throughout church history. You're the same that takes care of us today. And let there just be a strengthening of our hearts, of our trust factor, to trust in you with all of our heart, to not lean on our own understanding or how we perceive things in this world. And let us just find a sense of rest and peace, as our brother Andrew opened with today, that supernatural peace that is ours for the taking. All for the glory of Jesus, we pray. Amen. Psalm 112:7. Let's give a kind of like a header to the message today. He is not afraid of bad news. His heart is firm, trusting in the Lord. And we live in an information age where you can get a lot of news if you choose to. There are those that have got a little disciplined in their lives and have learned to maybe moderate their intake of news, and others are still news junkies and are needing a little, perhaps, self-control there. But there's no end of bad news. And in our day and age, where you have the ability to get so much news, and negative, bad news tends to be more appealing, we would do well to allow this verse to ask God, let this describe me personally, that I am not afraid of bad news. There's a lot of it. Some of it's real, some of it's fabricated and just hyped up. But whatever I hear, my heart is so firm in God, to be so secure, trusting in the Lord, that there is no fear here. And to have that that disposition about us, that almost strange, maybe on the face of it, like kind of cocky, like you're just kind of transcending. You're not ignorant or aloof, but you almost have like a holy apathy that no matter what report, like whose report are we going to believe? There's a lot of reports. Well, I'm going to make a choice to believe the report of the Lord, that if God is for me, who can be against me? And we find this this almost cockiness, sense of rest in the man Daniel. Now, Daniel had already seen a lot at this point in his life. He's an older man, likely in his, 50s or 60s, if you're there and you say, older, what do you mean? So he's had a lot of experience, and much of his life has been difficult. After all, as a young child, he was basically kidnapped from his homeland and taken to a foreign land, and had to trust in the Lord and to acclimate to the Babylonian system to some extent. He kept up barriers, but he was part of a wicked system. And he did well. He served under different kings, and got great prophetic visions, saw that Babylon was going to come and go, Persia was going to take its place, and here we are now. He has survived the transition from the collapse of Babylon into the Persian Empire, and that's where we pick up with this man of God in Daniel chapter 6. Verses 1 through 3. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, and to whom these satraps should give account, so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps because, and I love this, an excellent spirit was in him. And the king planned to set him over the whole realm. Now, in the original language, which in this case is Aramaic, most of the time the Old Testament's in Hebrew, but the book of Daniel has a lot of Aramaic. Basically, excellent spirit means preeminent, surpassing, extraordinary. And so he just stood out, perhaps like in the sense the Apostle Paul described Christians, that they stand out as lights in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. And so he stands out, and it's appreciated by the king, but just because you stand out doesn't always mean it's a good thing. Standing out can also mean that you're a target. So Daniel is serving with excellence, serving, we could say, as unto the Lord, because when you're a man of God, a woman of God, you've got a quality about you. You're going to have a work ethic. You're going to have integrity. You're going to do the things that you say long after the feelings you say them with are gone. There's commitment and value. And in a world, a fallen world, where that might be a rare commodity, that sets you over and above. And so certainly that is the case for Daniel. Now, let me read again the first three verses as really with the fourth verse as they should be read. And I'll come back, so bear with me for a moment. So it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give account, so the king might suffer no loss. Then Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Verse 4, as it should be read, then the high officials and satraps threw a celebratory party to congratulate Daniel. After all, Daniel works hard, and he's a blessing, and so he deserves to be blessed. And so let's just applaud his efforts. This is a wonderful thing. Now, that's how it should be read. And I'm not in any way taken away from the authority of Scripture. I'm just saying in an ideal world where there was no selfishness that's so ingrained that we think it's funny to hear such a thing. Because we live in a world that is filled with competition, with jealousy, with self-exaltation at the expense of everybody else. And so it's basically not as the world should be, but the account gives us the way the world actually is. And that is verse 4, then the high officials and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom. But they could not find no ground for complaint or any fault, because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. So this is just plain old jealousy. And unfortunately, jealousy basically rules our world. It dominates our world. Proverbs 27:4 says that anger is cruel, wrath is overwhelming, but who can stand before jealousy? And so jealousy or covetousness, that is just so ingrained in our fallen world. And of course, true to form here, these other officials are not at all happy because, well, what about me? What about me? It's like your kids, if you have a bunch of kids, and one kid gets blessed. Do the other kids like get a big old smiles and go, oh, I'm so glad he or she was blessed? Is that the first reaction or response? Often it's, what about me? Or why did they? And it's just, that's the world we live in. That's like ingrained in our DNA. Jealousy and covetousness and I should be exalted. I should be the one that gets all the benefits. And so here Daniel now is going to have to contend with a conspiracy of animosity a bunch of jealous co-workers, if you will, that of course aren't happy for him, and now they're going to try to trip him up. And you know, also typical of the world, here we are in a situation where they're workers and they're supposed to be doing their jobs. And if you know the narrative, think about all the energy now that's going to be spent in order to try to trip Daniel up instead of doing their work. And it's just kind of the way the world runs, that people tend to be nosy and they always want to have the advantage. And if somebody else appears to be getting an advantage or getting ahead, then it must be at my expense. And then I'm not going to just do my job as I should, but now I'm going to take and put a bunch of energy. And they all get together. They have their unified effort, which really could have been better spent just doing their work. And perhaps if they served with excellence, they would have been noticed. And I mean, how many workplaces operate this way, where someone that gets work, that works hard is resented by the rest, and then people just won't do their own. But anyway, I digress. Verse 5, then these men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." Then these high officials and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, "O King Darius, live forever." Time to butter him up. Verse 7, and all the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors and the governors, that were all agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den, or better understood as the pit of lions. Verse 8. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. And so, verse 9, very fast. Therefore, King Darius signed the document and the injunction. So they hatched this scheme that, of course, plays to the king's vanity. And the king is like, yeah, that is a great idea. You know, I want to have that honor, and thank you all for wanting to give me such honor, and I'll sign on to that immediately. Well, they did say all the officials, but there actually was an exception to that, which was the reason for them hatching this plot, because Daniel certainly would not be in favor of such an ordinance. And so here is Daniel and his typical standout devotion, Daniel 6, verses 10 through 11. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, so he hears the bad news, basically. When Daniel knew the document had been signed, what does he do? He went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. So for Daniel, he hears the bad news, and instead of reacting in a humanistic horizontal direction, well, I better go tell the king that's not right. He didn't ask my advice, or you know, he goes vertical. He just does what he does. It's business as usual. I go to God as I always do. And it seems like his pattern, it's explicit here, that he prays three times a day. Now, that is not a pattern per se that the Bible in any way admonishes, but it does, of course, admonish us to pray continually, and we should be praying periodically at a minimum. And so he goes, and he just goes vertical. Here's my supplication, Lord, I've heard this news. I'm not going to change. Almost like a holy apathy. That thing doesn't change me, because the law of heaven trumps any laws on earth. And so he prays, open window, he prays toward Jerusalem. Now at this time, Daniel was one of the captives in the east, in Babylon and now Persia. And they seem to have developed this tradition where they would point themselves towards the temple, or where the temple was in times past, towards Jerusalem. And actually Solomon had commended that when people were taken captive because of their sin, that they would pray towards this holy city. And so Daniel is following that. And so he's following God with all his heart. And his devotion is pure. He calls out, verse 11, then these men came by agreement. You know, a bunch of busybodies, got nothing better to do than to meddle and to be spying on Daniel. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. And then comes the accusation. Verses 12 through 15, then they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man within 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? And the king answered, now this is such a setup. The king answered and said, the thing stands fast. I made a great decision. And yeah, the thing stands fast according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked. And they answered, gotcha, said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And I could just picture Darius, all in his prestige and being flattered. You know, the Bible does say, by the way, in Proverbs, that when people flatter you, they're laying a net for your feet. And certainly that's what's going on here. All this flattery, all this playing to his vanity, and, oh, by the way, remember that thing you signed? Yeah, I signed that. Yeah, that's just a great idea. By the way, Daniel, he like, gulp. Like, oh, my goodness. I just see his appearance change. The color probably went out of his face, and his heart sank. His stomach was probably sick because that was his key man. That was the one that stood out, and it was going to be promoted like to number two in the kingdom. And it's like, wow, I just got totally burned. I mean, he was probably fuming at this point. He's probably just getting the realization that I just got duped by all these guys, and there's absolutely nothing. You know, what an irony, by the way, to be positioned by a law in a sense of deity that you're like God on earth. No one should pray to any god or person. But then you're powerless to revoke the very thing you agreed to. Very strange little sense of irony and conundrum he's in. Verse 14, then the king, when he heard these words, from delight to distress, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel. And he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. So he just goes basically into overdrive. You know, what can we do? Calling his lawyers. What can we do? How can we change this? I blew it. He's so mad at himself, I'm sure. Verse 15, there's these men. They came by agreement to the king and said to the king, know, king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed. And so the king basically is defeated by his own foolishness and of course, tripped up by this conspiracy, this collusion of corrupt officials. And Daniel is going to be, at least potentially, the victim of it. Verse 16, then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And so Daniel's commitment stood out, and his witness was known. The king knew that Daniel worshipped Jehovah and was totally devoted. And so he says, may your God, you're obviously a diligent seeker. Your character your commitment, your competence speaks to that effect. And you're not casual towards this God. So may your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, or was placed over the pit, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and the signet ring of his lords. So you seal the edge so no one can tamper with that. Nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. And so it is a very typical pattern, and it's just the way the world operates. And often enough, the godly go through a very similar pattern, because we live in a world that's filled with jealousy. People are not going to celebrate your spirituality. You know, Jesus said that men love darkness more than light. And so you would think that when you shine the light and you show the way, that there would be some type of, oh, great, thank you, I didn't know that, and embracing. But more often than not, that is not the case. And so the typical, how can we trip this person up, a conspiring that's going on, and then a trial that is allowed, going into the pit, going down, and facing these beasts, these hungry lions. It reminds me of how the Apostle Paul said that when he was at Ephesus, he was surrounded by beasts. And he said, if I had to put up with all that, then, and the resurrection is not a real deal, then I've totally labored in vain. I think it's 1 Corinthians 15 he suggests, and his description of beast-like opposition. And Daniel certainly is no metaphor here. He's going down into this pit where in the natural, he's going to be devoured. But thank goodness there is a kingdom above the natural kingdom. Thank goodness that there's a reality that is greater than what we can see, what we can sense. Thank goodness for a supernatural God, and that ultimately no weapon that is forged against God's people shall prosper. Daniel is going to win, and dare I say, he's going to win either way. If he is eaten, it is a day of deliverance. And to be sure, and I can't guarantee this, so it might be me reading into it a bit, but Daniel, again, he's older, and he's seen a lot of the foolishness of the world, and he could be to a point like, well, okay, I guess that's my exit out of this madness. I won't be in this clown world anymore, and I'll be with God, who I've trusted in all along. Great. But of course, there's a natural side. Even if we have that kind of confidence, when you're approaching this type of scenario, there's going to be some degree of fear and trepidation. And God comes through for him. And I'll just read it here in the narrative. And by the way, I got the verses wrong here. It's Daniel 6, 19 through 23, not 19 through 20. So verse 19, then at break of day, the king arose and went in haste. So what a long night for Daniel and Darius. Probably worse for Darius. The king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Now, Daniel must have been a great witness to this king, not only in his conduct, but also in his conversation. Daniel, no doubt, spoke to the king about his great God and perhaps recounted to the king the accounts of great deliverance of times past, of his people being delivered from Pharaoh and coming out of Egypt as overcomers, the deliverances of times past in terms of Joshua and David. And, of course, even in recent history, his three friends, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, in Daniel chapter 3, have been delivered from the fiery furnace. And so the king was aware of the power of Daniel's God. If he had no awareness of that, he would have just gone to bed, the guy's dead, why even go out there? And so there was a sense that, yeah, that God who Daniel speaks of, Daniel had been witnessing through conduct and through conversation. And so it motivates the king after this long night to come and, hey, that God who you talk about and that God who you're a living witness in front of everybody, did he deliver you? And listening. And I wonder how long it took for Daniel to respond. Like, that'd be the longest 10 or 20 seconds ever if you got silence there. But the voice comes back, verse 21. And Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth. They have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him. And also before you, O king, I have done no harm. And so no fault in me, certainly before my God. Does this mean, by the way, Daniel was flawless? No, but he had faith. And faith is what covers sins. And so blameless before him, and also integrity with you, O king. I have never in any way done you any harm or damage. I'm a hard worker, as you know. And so the king's exceedingly glad, verse 23, and commanded Daniel to be taken up out of that pit, out of that den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him. And then there's our big idea. There is our concept for the year. There's our word for the year. Why? Because he had trusted in his God. Daniel manifests the same noteworthy trust that his three friends did in Daniel chapter 3. Remember, when they were threatened, and Nebuchadnezzar was enraged, they said, okay, you can throw us into the pit, and our God's able to deliver us. Total trust. And even if he doesn't, we're still not going to bow down to your idol. So we'd rather die than dishonor our God. That was the same confidence and trust that Daniel had in his God. I would rather die than to in any way not honor and worship God first and foremost. He is my all in all. He is everything. And nothing or nobody can take away from that, no matter what the cost is. Now, let me finish off here with some takeaways. And so, by the way, if that was your first time hearing this, I kind of am a little jealous of you, speaking of jealousy, because to hear this for the first time, it's a cool account, isn't it? And it never gets old to me. So here's some takeaways. Number one, and this is obvious. I mean, if you've lived in this world long enough, you know, not everybody appreciates integrity, competency, and a good work ethic. And so, brothers and sisters, it's totally incongruent and irrational. I get it. You do the right things. You do as much as lies within you to live by principles, to treat people right, to be honest and open. And you would think that should net me positive consequences. But in this crazy upside-down world, it actually makes you a target. And I'm not suggesting that you don't operate that way so you won't be a target, but that's just the way it is. It's kind of in a way like Moses. Moses saw the injustice, and he worked to rectify the injustice towards his people, and I'm going to start a movement here, and it starts with this guy that's beating one of my people. And he thought that his brothers would understand, but his brothers didn't understand at all, and the good that he was attempting to do got totally turned on him, and it just backfired. And, you know, look at Jesus. He stood out. And there was no harm. There was no blame that could be imputed to him. And yet people, they turned on him. And even with commitment up front, yeah, you're the greatest thing ever. that all turned. And in life, that's the way it's going to be. I mean, even having a good work ethic. I've heard this more than once, so it's something that's just lodged in my mind, where brothers or sisters will say, you know, they get mad at me at work because I work too hard. You know, because what it's doing is it's showing off, it's displaying their laziness. And so, you know, you get to work, and sometimes they'll start on a job, and, hey, you're working way too fast. You know, slow down. It's not like, oh, good job. You know, let's all work together like that. It's a sad thing, but that's just part of the world we're in. And if you're competent, perhaps that makes people feel insecure. And if you have integrity, a lot of people operate in constant deceit. And so if you're a person that doesn't operate that way, it's like there's animosity there. So just be aware, but always serve unto the Lord. He is the one ultimately you're working for. You're not working for a boss or a business or a corporation. We are all working unto the Lord. And so even if everybody else doesn't appreciate our work ethic, which we all should have, a very strong work ethic, and it gets old in our day and age where you see so little of that. At one time, you know, most people were workers, and, you know, you don't work, you don't eat, was Paul's principle, and the exception is if you can't work, okay, then if you can't work, then you need help. I got it, but that's not the case of most people, and it's sad when there's not a work ethic. You know, you can become a workaholic. Yeah, I know that, but I'm not talking about that extreme either, but not everybody appreciates it. Takeaway number two. Daniel's prayers and thanksgiving were an uninterruptible part of his life. I don't care if the law comes down from the king. I don't care if it comes from Jefferson City. I don't care if it comes from Washington, D.C. Or I don't care from whatever the one world capital, the Mystery Babylon. I don't care what they say. I am not going to stop praying to my God. You know, and our brothers and sisters all over the world, we don't have this type of pressure, but all over the world, there's a lot of our brothers and sisters that they live under that pressure. And many of them make a conscious choice, like Daniel, that no matter what the costs are, I'm going to seek God. I'm going to get the word. Now, if I have to hide the word because it's illegal, okay. But just because it's illegal, it doesn't mean it trumps the law of God. This is what he's given me. And I'm going to read this word and live by the word. And getting together. You know, there's brothers and sisters on this very first fruit day of the week throughout the world that are gathering together with some pressure. That we can't relate to at this point. They have made a choice to gather together, and if they're caught, if that assembly is discovered, and sometimes they got to be concerned about, are there spies in our midst? Are there, you know, the secret police that are here? And so, but to have that firmness of commitment that no matter what the cost, if I'm to be imprisoned, or if I'm to lose my life, then I'm gonna be committed to Christ no matter what. Now, on the prayer and thanksgiving side of it, 1 Thessalonians 5:17 through 18, pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Oh, what's the will of God for my life? Well, there's at least one thing: to pray without ceasing and to give thanks in all circumstances. Notice with Daniel, back up in Daniel 6 and verse number 10. When Daniel knew the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had his windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day. And look what it says here. He prayed, which is basically to make supplication. It's basically like petitionary. So he heard the bad news. God, here's the bad news. Like when Hezekiah got the bad news, the scroll, and he took the scroll and he brought it before God and said, here's the bad news. Now you, God, you deal with it. And God dealt with it. Well, Daniel, in the same way, here's the bad news. But then notice what it says here, and gave thanks. To give thanks in all things. Now, it's easy to give thanks when everything is good and pleasant and easy for me. But it's hard for me to give thanks when there's opposition and this person's treating me this way and I'm dealing with this resistance or I'm feeling this pain. It can be hard to give thanks. But that's a place where over time, as you grow as a Christian, where you can actually give thanks in all things, whether full or lacking, whether rich or poor, whether popular or hated, it doesn't matter. Lord, I thank you for who you are. I thank you for what you've done in my life, which is exceedingly great and continues on. And I even thank you for this trial, this affliction. Now, that's very few of us that is that our first response. But to come to a point where we can even thank the Lord for a trial, knowing that God has allowed it and God has a good end attached to it. It is certainly not in vain and just to destroy me. And God is a good father, allows resistance, allows my endurance to be tested, allows my character to be developed often enough through difficult circumstances. Certainly that's Daniel here. He is being mistreated, abused, and experiencing potential harm. But no matter what, I'm going to continue to pray and even be thankful. And maybe that's something that you need to ask the Lord for in your life is, well, I pray and I ask, but I'm not very thankful. And to be thankful to God, and even for that thing that you're praying for and you're not satisfied with yet. And, God's drawn to that type of attitude. There's a humility when one says thank you for the difficulty, because what it's doing is it's acknowledging his sovereignty. You've allowed it. I concede. I'm thankful to you. It has a good end. And God's drawn to that humility towards thankfulness. And so that's another takeaway. Takeaway number three, Daniel preferred death to denying his God. These are the stalwarts. These are the standouts. These are like the advanced, which any of us can be, by the way. Any of us can move in this direction where we kind of see life for what it is, and death has no sting. Now, we know when a Christian dies, death has no sting. The grave doesn't have victory. But to have that disposition before you die, that death is not the worst case scenario. I'm willing to die for my faith because I see life as it is. It's just shadows and dust. It's a season. It's like a mist, a vapor that's there for a moment, then it's gone. And so, Lord, during this short little stay in this tent called my body, I understand, I see for what it is, and I'm willing. If you want me to have the privilege to die for my faith, then so be it. In Revelation 12, verse 11, it says about these martyrs at the end of time that they have conquered him, that is the dragon, by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. Why? For they didn't even love their lives unto death. They didn't love their lives so much that everything was about self-preservation and comfort and, oh, I don't want my status quo to be interrupted because I'm so intoxicated with this life I can't see past it. Instead, God's people ultimately should be described like this, that life is good, God's given it to me, but the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. And what I'm going to is ever so much better than what I'll be coming out of. For a Christian, you're just walking through a door into the next room. And the next room happens to be vast and awesome. And so I like that about Daniel. I like that about these saints at the end of time. And I hope that's all of us, that we don't love our lives so much that even we just see that, okay, if I die for my faith, so be it, to count it a privilege even. And it may not be martyrdom. Sometimes it's just dying to yourself along the way, and miniature deaths until you get to biological death, and just giving yourself to God. It's like an offering, you know, like a living sacrifice. I die daily, the Apostle Paul said. Okay, and then another takeaway here, number four, Daniel simply trusted in the Lord. Psalm 9, verse 10, and those who know your name put their trust in you. For you, O Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you. There's those that know God from a distance, and then there's those that know God's name. They know him personally. They're on familiar terms with God. So they're kind of like on a first-name basis, not some like objective God concept who's out there, but very personal. They know him by name. Psalm 9:10, they put their trust in you. You've never forsaken a person who seeks you. When you diligently seek the Lord, your reward is imminent. As you seek God, your faith and thereby your trust will grow in him. But if you're seeking other things at his expense, because we're going to be diligent about something in life, we're going to be passionate. There are things that drive us and motivate us. And so if much of it is just in this world, then it'll be at the expense of knowing God personally. So you can be saved legally. You can have a legal covering in that you believed, you're blood bought, you're his son or daughter, but still not be intimate, which is a sad thing. And so instead of being diligent just in this world, to be diligent, to be seeking the Lord every day. And as you draw near to God, as you take time to listen, as you make a choice to come to gatherings like this, where we're all diligently seeking God together, what happens is your trust factor is going to increase. And you'll be like the psalmist here. I trust in you. You've never forsaken those who seek you. I've learned you along the way, and you've never let me down thus far. Even in my foolishness, even in my stubbornness, you've never let me down. So certainly you're not going to let me down as I'm seeking you. And then Psalm 56, verses 3 and 4, when I am afraid, I put my trust in you, in God, whose word I praise. In God I trust. I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me? And you know, Spirit just quickened in my heart, so I'm real quick there, that there might be some of us here even that we have an unhealthy fear of people. And that can almost be an offense to God, because only God should have fear. In fact, Jesus made that plain. Don't fear people, even if they can kill you. That's as far as they can go. You should actually fear the one that can kill you and then separate you from him in all eternity in hell. And so, but the psalmist, when I'm afraid, because often, I don't remember if the psalmist was David here, but God's people can be provoked to fear by other people. You know, there's always these conspiracies going on, whether it's the devil working through somebody or a group of people that are working against you because they got nothing better to do. They can't mind their own business, which is this world. But to not be afraid of them, but instead, I'm going to place my trust in you, God. You've never left me or forsaken me. And so the psalmist says, I shall not be afraid. What can flesh do to me? What can a person really do to you? And once you get that in your heart, you almost become an untouchable. It's like no matter what, they call you to the office, they arrest you, they interrogate you or whatever. It's almost like, what can they really do to me ultimately? That is a solid, mature disposition. I place my trust fully in God. And I believe Daniel, obviously, he's just sold out. And I know that's what the Lord wants to do in our lives, to have such a security that we're not driven by every wind, we're not tossed to and fro by the bad news, but instead, when we hear the bad news, our heart is firm. We're like untouchables. It's like we're just transcending it. And so that's what the Lord wanted to help us with today. And so we're going to stand and pray and ask the Lord to finish this work in our hearts, to deepen this word. And so if we could close our eyes for a moment. If there are there's one or some that you don't know Jesus as your Savior, you know about God, but you don't know God personally, it is God's will that you become part of His family, and we are not born into His family. You have to be born again. You have to go through Jesus to become a child of God. And I'd love to pray for you today concerning that. If you've not yet committed your life and you sense the Lord drawing you, none of us can be right with God. Only Jesus lived a perfect life. And then He offers relationship to God through Himself. If you've not yet believed in Jesus Christ for salvation and that relationship, just between you and I, you'd like me to pray for you after the service, just raise your hand and I'll pray for you, friend. God loves you. You're amongst a group of people that are definitely wanting for you to make that good decision. We love you. We care for you. But no one's looking around, just me right now. If you'd like me to pray for you, just raise your hand, and I'll remember you in prayer, friend, after the service. Simple closing prayer. To have that firm heart trusting in the Lord. God, help me. Help me to not be afraid of bad news and all the conspiracies. We talk about whacked out conspiracy theorists, but there's a lot of conspiring going on. And some of it is the devil and his demons that are in league with people, and they don't even know it. But for us, it's like no big deal. For our heart to be firm, to not be afraid of bad news because we're trusting in the Lord. And you just want to ask the Lord for just give me more of that. Just grow me in that way, Lord. Just come on down and we'll close as a family. If I would definitely be coming down for this one. I can tend to be very reactive and what are we going to do?